Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's installment, we'll be going back up to the third floor of St. Cloud State University's Miller Learning Resource Center to talk once again with University Archivist Tom Stamen. Even in the midst of budget cuts at St. Cloud State University, the University Archives is doing a lot of important work and making that work available to the general public by digitizing as much of it as they can. Currently on the third floor, as we'll be talking about eventually, you'll be able to see a whole lot of Asian art that has been collected by the archive, but we'll get to that in a little bit. First, though, there's a little crossover between the archive and KVSC, and that's what we're going to start off with as we begin talking with Tom Stamen.
Hey, Tom, welcome back to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota.
Hi, Jeff. How you doing?
Excellent. It's a beautiful day out.
It is, and we're inside talking about historical stuff here in University Archives.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about.
Well, let's start off with the one that's, it's up on your computer, and it's also forefront on the KVSC minds, because this is about that time of year where we determine the trivia theme. University Archives has built the history of the KVSC Trivia Weekend. What can you tell us about that?
Well, this is obviously like a big event that goes on campus. And I've been personally involved with trivia for the last 20-plus years. I will not tell you what team that I have played on, but it is one of the top teams, not the one who always seems to be winning the last few years, but a long-time team. And I came here in 2007, so I'm from Minnesota. I'm a native Minnesotan from Minneapolis. I have family who live in central Minnesota, so when I got hired in 2007, it was certainly a homecoming for sure. And I hadn't been to St. Cloud for a number of years, about 10 years before I had arrived, and that was because of trivia. So becoming the university archivist and being very keenly aware of the KVSC Trivia Weekend, this is actually something that I've wanted to do for a long time. So we had some ambition, motivated intern, a motivated staff member. I've always been motivated to do this, and I felt that the time was right to do a virtual exhibit on KVSC Trivia Weekend.
So what kind of things do you have up there on the website?
So what the website does, so we checked several places. We did several things. So the records of KVSC that we have here at University Archives, and a lot of it is trivia. So there's trivia posters, there's answer books, T-shirts, which is my favorite piece, and the T-shirts go back all the way to 1984. We're missing a couple, but we've got almost all of them. And then as well, some other records that we have here, there's press releases and a few other things that we had. So we gathered information together. So my intern, I had an intern, her name is Kathy Coates. She's a library staff member here who's in the graduate history program. And I had approached her with this as an intern project, so she interned for me in the spring, this past spring, and then she just finished it up this summer to do various things here in archives and learn all the magic that we do here, as well as create this virtual exhibit using Omeka. So Kathy Coates, who is a library staff member, gathered material, history about the contest using materials from University Archives. So we did go to the St. Cloud Times and we consulted articles from the Times to help us in our summary of this. So we have a whole summary of it as well as which was helping us sort of build a framework to decide what to put in this exhibit. So
nice.
So I can take a breath here for a second.
Sorry, Jeff. That's okay.
Keep talking.
Well, that's kind of the point, though.
So we have this virtual exhibit, and there's two main things of why I do these exhibits. One is to educate people about the rich history of this university, and there's a lot of rich history, and this is certainly one of the pieces that I consider very rich history, as well as highlight the materials that we have here in University Archives. So instead of thinking, oh, go to archives, they got just dusty, musty old stuff no one ever cares about, well, there are things here that are old, but they are relevant for today. So I felt it was a good idea that we gather to see what we have from 1980 to the present for the KVSC Trivia Weekend, put it together in a virtual exhibit for people to see. So the kinds of things that are on there is, well, let's go to a year here, Jeff. So yeah, 1980 was the first year.
Yeah, let's pick 1980, the first year.
So we have here 1980, Jeff. We have some images from the Chronicle of the, here's KVSC Studios during the first trivia contest. So we have, but then we have these pieces of information that are always the same. So you go, you click each year. So there's a page for each year. So you click on the year and you'll see the same things. What was the theme? What was the date? Who the winning teams were, at least the top five teams. Trivial facts that we found that we thought could be interesting about each contest, as well as memorable quotes. Ooh. So you'll see the same thing. They'll be in sort of a different form, and they're all kind of laid out a little differently. But this one has images, so you can see the images. These are all from archives. And then we have those pieces that I told you about. And then at the end, we have some questions that were from that contest. Now, we have answer books that go back to 1984. So could you do you know what the trivia theme was that year?
In 84? Oh, geez.
Think athletic contest in Los Angeles.
Oh, it could have been Olympics.
Trivia Olympics.
There we go.
Trivia Olympics. It was actually the second themed contest. 1983 was extra trivial or something.
Yeah, it was Trivia Weekend before that.
Trivia Weekend. So, theme ET Extra Trivia was the first one.
There you go.
Our first answer book is from 1984. But we were able to find questions for each year. So there are some years that we do not have question books for. So you saw my Facebook posting on the KVSC, whatever, the people who run that trivia Facebook site. We still are missing some trivia answer books. Mm. So when we couldn't get questions from the trivia handbooks, usually these other sources that we had a question or two about that had appeared in the contest.
Yeah, those things linger around there someplace. I bet they're out there someplace, but who knows?
Yeah, I'm trying to. There was a certain question writer I've been trying to get some material from, and I have not been successful yet. So I'm trying again. So there's other folks that I have contacted, including the team that I plan, who have these, but they don't want to give them up. Ooh. I said, well, I would really like the physical copies, and we'd have them here. But they have not been willing to do that.
Well, that is something about the trivia teams. There's this, you could call it information hoarding, if you will. back in the day, I remember stories about this. It was before my time up here. I've only been up here since 2003, but they would go to the library and people would just clear out the library, and they'd have their wagons full of books. But you don't need to do that anymore. Now it's on the computer. So I could see how some teams might be hesitant about sharing because they know that you're going to put all this information up on the computer. But and this is the fun thing I found about trivia in writing a trivia question. Sometimes that stuff isn't that easy to search. When I've written questions about the Granite City Radio Theater, yeah, there's no keyword search for that. You have to actually listen to the podcast and figure out where that is, So, but I mean, you've got all these years up there, and this is how searchable is this? How could somebody just Google into this and kind of figure something out?
Sure, people could do that. People could do that. But this information could probably be found pretty easily somewhere else as well. So none of this is like secret, top secret stuff that we have here in archives. But the idea is just to give people an idea of how the contest was going and what the themes were and what were the T-shirts. So for the T-shirts, we can go back to the T-shirts a second. You can see here's the first one, Trivia Olympics 84. I went for the gold. Look at that. It's great. So here we have, I had roped in a student of mine, my intern and my staff person at the time, to model these T-shirts. So we're missing just a couple of them, but here we have the T-shirts. And there's some variations, like Superheroes of Trivia had two slightly different T-shirts. Mm-hmm. We did include those. And then the ESPN one, there's a different style T-shirt. But they're there, and you get the idea of what these things look like. And to me, it's the T-shirts. I know the posters probably not quite as much that people don't see this stuff anymore.
The posters. Oh yeah, let's see your posters there. Oh, look at all the posters.
Yeah.
all the different ones. Yeah, I was noticing there's a couple of t-shirts that I've got that you don't have. So
really?
Yeah.
There's like two of them that we're missing.
There's
Trivia Hot Dish is one.
Trivia Hot Dish, and then...
Trivia Hotel?
Trivia Hotel, 2006. That one.
Oh.
Yeah, because that's the t-shirt.
We do have the t-shirt. I recently got that. We haven't had it photographed yet, so we do have that. But we're missing Hotel Trivia and Trivia Hot Dish. So if you have those, Jeff, I would be hot eternally dish, grateful.
Yeah, Hot Dish, that was my first trivia, was Trivia Hot Dish, and I was on a team. And I won't mention the team name, but it was my first experience. I had no idea what trivia was. And I experienced it, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. I'm never playing with you guys again. And then I went down to the station and have been there ever since. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, trivia is upon us in about 6-7 months, so there you go.
So the theme will come out in August, is usually?
Probably August, yeah. There's a process that the theme selection goes through where basically everybody throws out a bunch of possible themes, and then it's almost like an elimination thing. We start voting, and it's like, who likes this one? Who likes this one? And then we cut it in half, and then people argue, and then people discuss, and then people vote, and then argue, and then vote, and then cut it in half. And then it gets down to the last two, and it can be... it could be pretty interesting. The debates. There was superheroes of trivia. The alternate theme that lost out that was really being promoted by some of the more nerdier people at KVSE, you know, like the engineers, was social media trivia. Because this is right when all this was really blowing up. But everybody was just like, you can't do anything. It's not fun.
It's not fun.
No. Superheroes, come on!
That was a great contest, too.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. That was fun. So, yeah, trivia on... And this is all accessible from the University Archive website, correct?
Yep, it is. So you go to our archives homepage, you go to Digital Exhibits and Historical Compilations, which is under Finding Materials, and there it is, right at the top, Jeff, right underneath the Digital Exhibits. So I just put that up last week. It just was finished last week. So it goes from 1980 to 2015, but as the contests continue in the future, we will add future stuff to it. And as I get stuff from the past that I think would be relevant and would be interesting for an exhibit, like if you have some T-shirts or some posters, I would scan those. We'd put those online for people. So we have like a t-shirt gallery. We have like a posters and ads gallery. What else do we have here? We have by trivia by the numbers. So there's a number of teams that have participated, volunteers, number of hours that have played. So there's something that you can look at with these charts. And then we also have other KVSC trivia resources, which include the KVSC Trivia website, our finding aid for the KVSC records that we have here in archives, our Archon portal where we can find images of trivia and other things about the university, as well as my favorite aspect of trivia, which is the Shake a Hamster Man.
Absolutely. Well, right on. Well, how about we shift gears just a little bit? We're talking with Tom Stamen from University Archives, and it's not just tracking KVSC trivia. You guys have plenty going on here, and one of the really neat things. So we just had, you know, the 4th of July, a very patriotic time, and University Archives has some pretty patriotic things going on. Want to start off with World War One.
World War One, yes. So there's this project that we were working with the Minnesota Military Museum. So the dean and I had gone up there last summer, and they have this library of stuff of all these books that they've got, and they're not sure what to do with. But as we were looking through them, I saw these Minnesota County World War One yearbooks, and I had no idea what they were. Well, it's literally, as I was just showing you, Jeff, these are yearbooks of... I call it a yearbook. I guess it's like the easiest thing to call. You have pictures of guys and women. It's men and women, as well as I've seen African Americans, seen minorities, and they're of these men and women who have fought in World War One. So there's a picture of the person. And there's a description of where they're from. They may have who their parents were, what they did, where they were where they were inducted into the service. And there's also a section for those folks who fell during World War One, who died, as well as the county's efforts for fundraising to Red Cross, to growing food to doing whatever, documenting all of the county's efforts into supporting the U.S. during the Great War.
Wow.
So the dean, so I saw these, and the dean's like, well, we should partner with them. What should we do with them? And I said, well, we should do some of these World War I yearbooks. So we had an agreement with them this past spring. We actually finished this project early June to digitize. It was 29 Minnesota counties, and there's one that the one I showed you from Becker County, they didn't have. 29 of these, and there's three. There's one from North Dakota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. It was like, it was almost 7,000 scans of these yearbooks to make them available. And so the idea is, as we scanned all this material and we gave it to the military museum, it'll be up to them to decide what to do with it. So the idea, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, is to make an application to the Minnesota Digital Library, which is supported by our incredible legacy funds, as well as KVSC and ourselves and lots of other people, to make these available online, because obviously World War One is a timely issue and will be once April 2017 rolls around, when the U.S., 100 years after the U.S. had entered the war.
Oh.
These are fantastic. I saw these and I could not believe my eyes. And we do have a handful of them here in the library. The ones that we had, they were actually out on the shelves, and I took them, pulled them out, and they're in our rare books collection. I had MDL scan the Ramsey County yearbook, and it's really long, and that one's available on Minnesota Reflections for people to download, search, enjoy, whatever. These are unbelievable it makes me kind of speechless, because it's just, I could not believe these concise, summary, artful, informative publications that are available to see, well, you know, what did my county do, or what did my area do during World War One?
Yeah, this could be people like great great grandparents going off to war, and you know, just the way that looking at the, you know, the cover, the way that this is put out, you're talking about how just well done it's done,
right, it's
you know, and if you think about it, you know, they didn't have the computer that we do today, and how we can just throw something together really quick and throw something up there. This is a painstaking process for them to put together a yearbook of, you know, who's going off to serve our country.
Right.
Yeah. And right. It's stood the test of time. That those books are in pretty good shape.
They're in great shape, and they are just as informative, if not more informative today than they were when they were published right after the Great War. So a funny story I had about these. So my wife's grandfather served in World War One. So he immigrated from Sweden, and then he entered the war. My wife was telling me, and I've seen some of the paperwork. I have some of the paperwork at home. My wife has, and he was inducted in, like, it was in either Washington or Oregon, I don't remember. But there was one for the Isani County, and that's where he grew up, near Cambridge. So I'm paging through it one day. I'm like, there he is. Mm-hmm. And here I showed, there is her. And I was surprised to see him in there. But he was a resident of Isani County, regardless of where he was inducted, and there he was. And I posted it on my wife's Facebook page, and her relatives were going crazy over it, because here you have a picture of the guy. He's maybe 20 years old, and here's his little paragraph about what he did in the war. So he survived, obviously, and he didn't see any fighting, but he was in France.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of that out there. Yeah. Well, and, you know, continue with that, and just, you know, how remembering our history is so important, and those little tidbits. You guys are also working on something for World War II. Isn't that right?
That's right, Jeff. That's right. We are digitized. So what we have is about 130 oral histories from World War II veterans that were done in the late 80s, early 1990s. But mostly done by David Overy, who was a late professor of history here at St. Cloud State. So one of my added duties last year when I came back from sabbatical was that I now would be in charge of the Central Minnesota Historical Center, which was previously run by Department of History. So there were things in there that I knew had a lot of high value, and these oral histories certainly have that high value. So about half of them had transcripts. They already had transcripts. These are all on audio cassettes that you can listen to, but they're being digitized, so you don't need to listen to the audio cassette. So about half of them had transcripts, the other half did not. So I had two students last academic year work solely on those oral histories that had the transcripts. So they're, you know, typed out on typewriters on paper, and I had these guys transcribe them into Word documents. So almost all of them are done. The other half, I'm having the Minnesota Digital Library digitize the audio as well as transcribe the interviews themselves. So that's something that's being worked on right now. And I'm really, really excited about these stories. I mean, these guys, I mean, there's a guy who was in Pearl Harbor. There were two guys who were on the Bataan Death March. I mean, there's countless guys who flew missions over Europe on airplanes who were shot down and were captured in prisoner and were in prisoner of war camps, who saw the concentration camps. I mean, it's unbelievable the stories that these guys tell. And I was afraid that my students, that's all I had these two students do the whole academic year. And I was worried, they're like, oh, this could be boring. But the stories that these guys were reading, they would show me, like, Tom, check this out. And I would just shake my head. And hearing these stories of these guys and what they did, you know, when they're 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, these guys are flying, you know, bombers over Europe, you know, and what am I doing when I was 20 years old, you know, going to school and these guys are at war, you know. These stories are absolutely incredible.
So, once again, how many of these do you guys have? And these were collected how long ago?
There's about 130 of these interviews, and they were collected. They were recorded over 20 years ago.
Okay.
So in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, because those guys are starting to pass now. Of course,
yeah,
there's very few. Yeah, it's that's the nature of time. So, yeah, somebody had the foresight to. Well, do their job. You know, history professor, hey, let's record some history. So there we go.
So there are some of the transcripts that my two students worked on. They're actually available on our Archon portal. So you won't be able to hear the audio, but you can certainly read these stories. And I've had students who have already used these for student projects. And I encourage anybody, regardless of it, student, staff, faculty, general public, whoever, to look at these oral histories and learn a little bit about what the nitty-gritty of what these guys did during the Second World War.
It's pretty amazing. Well, let's see. There's a couple other things that the archive has going on now. I want to talk about that a little bit.
So there's this gentleman by the name of William Lindgren. He was a faculty member here in the late 80s. He was here in the 70s, 60s, but he passed away in the early 1990s. And he left his Asian art collection. He traveled in Asia working for a oil company from like the late 40s until like the mid 60s. And he worked for like a drug company. But he was all over Asia, and in his travels, he collected this Asian art. So when he passed away in 93, the objects were given to St. Cloud State University. So unfortunately, most of these objects have been unseen. So I got here in 2007, so our reading room had Asian art. Don't get me wrong, I like Asian art, but the Asian art needs to be out for people to see, enjoy, study, and I'm working with the art department as well as some students to make that happen right now.
Right.
So what we're doing is you probably saw the two exhibit cases. We're getting those filled. Those will be ready tomorrow. We have Asian art that is, if you come up to third floor Miller Center, around the archives area, we have a bunch of Asian art from China, Philippines, Afghanistan, India, lots of stuff for people to come and see. And there'll also be a website, and we're working on getting that built, for people to get a taste of that and see some of the objects online as well as learn more about Lindgren and this Asian art collection. So I'm happy this stuff's being out for people to see after being hidden away in archives for much too long.
Yeah, it gets tucked away, and then there you go.
It gets tucked away and forgotten about.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, oh, you got that stuff? I didn't know that. We should do something about it. And then nothing ever happens. So so this art professor, this adjunct, Sarah Bavelli, she's been very interested in getting this art out. So I'm very thankful to have someone who is knowledgeable in that. I don't know anything about caring for museum objects or how they should be stored or how they should be hung or how they should be described. I don't know. That is not my field of expertise. And I have this faculty member who's very interested in this work and has been working on this with me and my former staff person this past spring to make this stuff available. So I'm really excited. So there will be more art here in Miller Center for people to look at. So venture up the third floor to check it out.
Neat. Very neat. And then finally, you got somebody working on some University Chronicle action.
Yeah, the Chronicle. So the Chronicle is actually the third St. Cloud State student newspaper. There was a Normalia, which ran from 1892 to 1904, which is all digital, online, thanks to our friends at the Minnesota Digital Library and the legacy funds that I received to scan those. SCSU Normal Recorder, which was just a very brief newspaper during World War I, which actually tells some interesting stories about St. Cloud State students, faculty who served, and alums who served in World War I. So those are all online, Jeff. The Chronicle started in 1924, September 24, and continues being published today. So a few years ago, I had someone scan for the microfilm that we have from 1924 to spring 1959. All those issues, I can't tell you how many issues there are. It's probably about
a lot.
800. There's a lot there. But they're available on our Archon portal on the Archives website as PDFs, as individual issues for people to download and read. So this summer, I thought it'd be a good time to revisit some of that. So I've had a student scanning from microfilm the stuff from the fall 59, and he's through the spring 65. And he's going to do a little more of that work, and we're probably going to keep continuing that work. But the student newspapers are just an incredible resource of what was happening week by week during the academic year here on campus. Obviously, things were not – everything couldn't be reported or interested students. So this will certainly give people an idea of what was happening on campus during that time. So I can tell you this, though, Jeff. So – I've heard stories, have these ghost stories, on campus, and I think they're fun, but I don't have any proof of any of these. So you hear about this double murder that allegedly happened in Lawrence Hall in the early 50s. Well, you could have read those before, but the idea is now you can look and see if there really was a murder. Now, there was not, and I'm surely guessing if there was a double murder on campus, it would have been reported. It was not.
Yeah.
but that's sort of the idea. So you can really get the nitty-gritty of what was going on campus. And we do get requests often for the Chronicle. So it does have a lot of high value to me and really justifies the amount of time that we spend on scanning and make them available. So it isn't as easy as simply scanning. As I tell my student, that's the easy part. There's all these other things that we have to do to make these things available for our users. So as I was saying earlier, the magic that happens in archives, there's some magic that does happen, and it does take some work, but I think the effort is certainly worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what do you think about this dynamic? Because, I've talked to the Chronicle folks, Jeremiah and Vicky, for their 90th anniversary. This was a little while ago. And the Chronicle is kind of transitioning out of actual physical print and into a digital realm, which, a lot of newspapers are. And that's part of the evolving nature of media these days. So what do you think that's going to do to, the archives? Because, you would have a physical piece of paper that then you would scan in and do a bunch of work to, and then it's available, of course, digitally. But then, what happens when there's no paper?
That's using other means to capture that information, and that's a struggle for us as well as a struggle for a lot of archives across the world of what to do with that digital stuff. So we're working on a way to make that a little easier, but we need help. I'm hoping that the Chronicle folks are cognizant of that either as well as us. So any help that we can get from anybody regarding their digital records is most helpful. But it's going to take some time because a lot of resources at this university to make that happen. And we're hoping that we can do that work.
Well, excellent, excellent. Well, thanks for talking with me today, Tom.
You're welcome. I appreciate it anytime, Jeff.
And once again, in today's Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, we've been talking with St. Cloud State University archivist Tom Stamen. Located on the third floor of the Miller Learning Resource Center, the University Archive is also available online. Just go to stcloudstate.edu, and in the search field, type in archive. Or you can link to it off of our podcast for this story at kvsc.org. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through funding by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.